Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Dr. Marietta Stanton's outstanding book, Our Children Are Dying, examines in great depth problems relating to teenage pregnancies. She encourages society, and for good reason, to find workable solutions to the problem of teenage pregnancy. Somehow, she says, we need to reach our teenagers without making moral judgments about pregnancy or the availability of alternatives. Pages 35 and 36. Much of the information in Dr. Stanton's book is extremely helpful, as I hope you discovered in our study of protecting our children. But she is dead wrong in the last statement I have just read to you. Teenage pregnancy is a moral problem, a problem for both the young woman and the man involved, and also a moral problem for society. My friends, when young men and women, or old men and women, engage in sexual relations outside marriage, they are guilty of serious sin. Not only and not primarily because they sin against each other and against the baby which may be conceived, but they sin against God Almighty and against humanity. I agree with Dr. Stanton that once the baby is conceived, we must do all within our power to help the teenage mother and her unborn child. But sex outside marriage is sinful, always sinful. Dr. Stanton thinks birth control to prevent unplanned pregnancies may be one solution to the problem we're facing. But her suggestion would worsen the situation, not solve it. And besides, God forbids sex outside marriage, regardless of the circumstances. Taking precautions does not help in the long run. Those who teach otherwise are doing enormous damage to our young people and to the family. What I have discussed with you thus far has been protecting our infants, neonatal and postnatal. Let us look briefly at the children from ages 5 to 14. The single greatest killer of children ages 5 to 14 is accidents. Approximately one-third of the children who were killed in this age group died from some kind of accident. Many of the children were killed in motor vehicle accidents, either as a passenger, or while riding a bicycle, or as a pedestrian. Non-vehicular accidents resulted from fires, drownings, airway obstruction, discharge of firearms, falls, accidental poisonings, and electrocution. Pages 44 through 47. Children in this age group also died at their own hands. According to Dr. Stanton, in 1982, over 200 children between ages 5 and 14 took their own lives. The number of suicides in this cohort is expected to rise 13% by the year 2000. What is particularly disturbing and inexplicable to me is that children as young as 5 have attempted to kill themselves. Page 68. Obviously, dedicated parents are doing and will continue to do all within their power to prevent the deaths of their children, whatever the age of the children. We cannot afford to be careless about fires or falls or firearms. Many deaths could be avoided if we use a little greater caution. I know all parents will want to be as careful as they know how in order to prevent the premature deaths of their children. A great number of teenagers, those from 14 to 19, are lost through accidents. In 1987, approximately 8,500 teens were killed by accidents. Dr. Stanton says that 2 of every 5 deaths in older adolescents are related to car accidents. And in the majority of these, the driver tests positive for alcohol abuse. Page 48. Dr. Stanton remembers an incident from her teen years. 5 young men, 16 to 18 years of age, were killed in an automobile accident. They had been drinking heavily at a tavern and Lev very much intoxicated. At the time, the legal drinking age was 18, but they had faked their identification to be sure of being served. Page 49. Probably every one of you could give other examples of tragedies among teenagers in our communities. Drowning is quite high in this age group, as are accidents with firearms. A substantial number of teenagers die from poisonings, especially poisonings related to the use of various kinds of drugs, both legal and illegal. Dr. Stanton says the major type of legal drug involved in accidental deaths in this group consists of analgesics, drugs which produce insensitivity to pain, antipyretics, fever-removing drugs, and drugs of similar nature. Page 50. Parents should exercise the greatest caution when administering drugs, even prescription or over-the-counter drugs. The number of children who die each year from failure to be careful in using drugs is formidable. Unfortunately, suicide has become a major threat to teenagers. Dr. Stanton says, among our young people aged 15 to 19, the facts on suicide are staggering. For every death by drowning, there are 3 suicides. For every 3 murders, 4 suicides occur. And for every 2 teenagers who die in automobile accidents, 1 suicide is reported. Page 69. Many experts on adolescent suicide agree that suicide is the second leading cause of death among teenagers. Dr. Stanton agrees with the experts and says the same holds true for young adults, those between 20 and 24 years of age. Page 69. Homicide is high among our teenagers. In fact, it is ranked as high as the 3rd leading cause of death among teenagers in many urban settings, such as Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. Dr. Stanton says that the causes of teen violence resulting in homicide are most often related to drugs, alcohol, or gang-type activities. The most frequent perpetrators of teen homicide are acquaintances. Page 19. My friends, how can we keep the deaths of our infants, children, and young people from weighing heavily on our minds and on our consciences? Think of the unspeakable loss our nation suffers when we lose our children to preventable diseases and accidents. Think of the heartaches parents and others suffer when our children kill one another and take their own lives. But how do we go about the process of protecting our children from harm, whether of the body or of the mind or of the spirit? Please do not interpret what I am about to say as the rantings and ravings of a gloom and doom preacher. But there are cases where we can do nothing about the deaths of our precious children. Some children are born with serious maladies and will die from those problems, regardless of our love, concern, and care. Some accidents occur in almost all age categories. There may be nothing you can do about some of these cases. I have preached the funerals of children who died in spite of all their loving parents could do to make them safe. This is a sin-infested world, and death is a part of our condition. I'm always deeply shaken when a child or a young person dies. I grieve with the parents and other family members. But there are some deaths among infants, children, and young people which seem to be unavoidable. How tragic that our world is filled with disease, sickness, and death. We must do our best to overcome the effects of sin in our world. But the ultimate answer is to go to heaven, where God shall wipe away all tears from our eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Revelation 21:4. What a glorious day that will be. But it is not about these deaths, the unavoidable ones, that I want to address for the remainder of our time today. I want to speak especially about the deaths of infants, children, and teenagers, which are a national disgrace. Deaths from child abuse, alcohol and drug use, suicide, and such like. Dr. Stanton says that 1,200 children were killed by their parents or guardians in 1986, and as many as 24,000 were injured. Those numbers are disturbing, but they are almost unquestionably too low. Some experts estimate that as many as 7,000 children are killed every year by their parents or guardians, and as many as 2 million are abused. Whatever the figures, and it is almost impossible to be exact, one child's death from family abuse is too many. I'm aware of the enormous pressures parents have to undergo in our day. In many homes, both parents have to work in order to keep the wolf away from the door. Food and clothing are high. Taxes are high and going higher. Doctor's bills are sometimes burdensome. How can modern parents provide for their children and put away some savings for a rainy day and for their old age? The pressures are great, but this does not justify a parent beating a child to death or scalding it or pushing it down the stairs. Nothing justifies abusing a child. Let me ask you a question which has been on my mind for many months. Could there be a connection between the increase in child abuse and the legality of abortion, the ultimate form of child abuse? The number of children being abused in 1993 is many times greater than was true in 1973, the year the infamous Roe v. Wade was decided by the United States Supreme Court. If a child can be aborted up until the day before it is born, and it can be, what could possibly be wrong with killing the child the day after or the week after it was born? If you have the answer to that question, you will do me a favor by giving it to me. Are women who abort more likely to abuse their children who are already born? If we are going to stop child abuse, either before the child is born or afterward, we must have instilled in our hearts the biblical truth that all human life is sacred. That by itself may not be the whole answer, but it is absolutely necessary to solve the tragedy of child abuse. Please listen to what God says about the value of all children, born and unborn. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knows right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret, and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of me. Psalm 139, 14-16. If all human life is not sacred, how do you explain Christ's words in these verses? But the very hairs of your head are numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Matthew 10:30-31. Let me ask you one more question about child abuse. Could violence in general have any relationship to the great number of cases of child abuse? Many of our movies and television programs promote senseless violence. Men and women are shot or killed in other gruesome ways. Even cartoons, supposedly designed for children, are extremely violent. How can children or adults be fed a constant diet of violence and not be affected by it? Violence has become so common in the United States that many people see nothing wrong with killing people who get in their way. Oftentimes, children get in our way. Many of our young parents have been reared in an atmosphere of violence. They have seen thousands of murders and muggings and other acts of violence. Some of these acts of violence were portrayed on television, as if they provided a reasonable solution to some problem. When young parents have seen that kind of violence all their lives, we should not be surprised that they attempt to stop a crying baby, or a baby who has soiled his clothes, or who in some other way interferes with their pleasure by beating it unmercifully, or by burning it with cigarettes. In our society, it is a wonder that more children are not abused. Alcohol is a contributing factor in many cases of child abuse. When a person is under the influence of beverage alcohol, he will often behave in ways which would be abhorrent to him if he were sober. I do not know how many cases of child abuse are directly related to alcohol. Probably no one knows. But knowing what we do about how alcohol affects human beings' behavior, we would not be surprised if it were not implicated in hundreds and hundreds of cases of child abuse. As I have read to you many statistics regarding the causes of the deaths of our children, you could not avoid noticing how often alcohol was mentioned. These quotations are from Dr. Stanton's book, Our Children Are Dying. 2 of every 5 deaths in adolescents are related to motor vehicle accidents. 62% of tested drivers aged 16 to 19 had positive blood alcohol levels. Causes of teen violence resulting in homicide are most often related to drugs, alcohol, or gang-type activities. Page 19. I want to read you some other brief excerpt from Dr. Stanton's book. A pregnant mother who is addicted to alcohol or drugs passes that addiction on to her developing infant. At birth, the infant has to deal with the same physiological problems of addiction and withdrawal as the mother does when she is cut off from her supply of alcohol or drugs. Page 33. Alcohol kills up to 10 times more people than all other drugs. These days, our teenagers have greater access to alcohol, as evidenced by the fact that 60% of high school seniors consume alcohol on a regular basis. Page 114. The following paragraph from Dr. Stanton's book ought to awaken parents to the grave alcohol problem we face in the United States. The media and highly visible celebrities, such as rock stars and professional athletes, often are responsible for glamorizing drugs and alcohol. Our children are impressed by the slick beer commercials and by powerful role models whose actual or reported drug use encourages large numbers of teens to experiment with drugs and alcohol. As discussed before, alcohol plays a part in many teenage deaths involving motor vehicles. In fact, in over half of the accidents involving teens, the driver, also a teen, was intoxicated. Besides being the culprit in teenage drinking and driving accidents, alcohol and other drugs also influence teen sexual behavior. Page 115. Let me read one more paragraph from Dr. Stanton's book before we analyze what Christians must do about our alcohol problem. Over 4.5 million teenagers between the ages of 14 and 17 are problem drinkers. 1 of 3 high school seniors will get drunk on a weekend. Alcohol is a drug, and it is addictive. Page 178. Now, what can parents and other concerned Americans do about the widespread use of alcohol among our teenagers and other people? First, Christians have an obligation to work for the removal of all manufacturers, distributors, and retail establishments which have any connection with alcohol. I am aware that this amounts to prohibition, but there really is no other solution. The alcohol crowd says prohibition was tried and did not work. Why should we try it again? There is a problem with that observation. It is false. Prohibition was not tried. It was not even semi-tried. Criminals such as Joseph Kennedy Sr. violated the law, imported and distributed beverage alcohol and got rich in the process. Why were not such men prosecuted and imprisoned for their flagrant violation of American law? Please explain a serious dilemma to me. Why do we spend millions and millions of dollars trying to outlaw crack, heroin, marijuana, and such drugs, and allow alcohol to remain legal? Alcohol kills many times more people, both young and old, than cocaine, heroin, marijuana, TCP, and LSD combined. At most, these so-called hard drugs kill 20 to 25,000 people per year. Alcohol kills as many as 200,000 people per year. Besides, alcohol is implicated in 50% of all divorces, 50% of all highway deaths, about 25,000 each year, 50% of all serious crime, and untold numbers of other miseries which afflict the human family. If you can explain to me why we make illegal so-called hard drugs and allow beverage alcohol to remain legal, you will do me a great favor. Alcohol is the hardest drug and our biggest drug problem, except nicotine. There is one major difference between beverage alcohol and nicotine, however. Nicotine hurts primarily the ones who use it, and alcohol hurts everybody in our society. Every phase of American society, and not just the home, is adversely affected by beverage alcohol. Besides, legal manufacturers of strong drink are just one step above bootleggers. The modern manufacturers are legal, but not moral. What troubles me most about the current alcohol situation is the failure of the churches and of religious leaders to take a stand against this unmitigated evil. Priests, rabbis, and preachers cannot be ignorant of the ravages of alcohol. Even the public media, which support beverage alcohol in every situation, except maybe drunk driving, have made available to us all of the facts relating to broken homes and broken bodies resulting from the consumption of alcohol. Why are the religious leaders so weak and so spineless that they do not take a stand against this great evil? One reason comes to mind. Many of the religious leaders are themselves drinkers. And a second is, they have within their congregations a substantial number who sell alcohol or who drink it. How can we wonder why our teenagers drink and drive? It should not come as a surprise that teenage girls drink during their pregnancies. They have learned drinking habits from their parents, from prominent actors and athletes, and from their preachers, priests, and rabbis. I am aware that some of my preacher friends may not like what I am saying to you, but they know it is the truth. Solomon wrote 3,000 years ago, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise." Proverbs 20:1. Maybe you're thinking that I have grown up in a family and in a community where drinking was not known and where there were no problems associated with alcohol. If you are thinking that, let me quickly assure you that such was not the case. My grandfather on my father's side was unquestionably an alcoholic. At one time he had quit drinking, but when he became deputy sheriff in my home county and was required to raid stills, he carried the homebrew to his house and started drinking again. He became so addicted to alcohol that he tried to kill his own son, my father, because Dad had hidden some of his whiskey. He was miserable. Those around him were miserable because of his addiction to strong drink. My father, his brother and sisters, and others were adversely affected by my grandfather's drinking. He was a brilliant man, but destroyed himself by alcohol. He died almost penniless. My grandfather on my mother's side was not an alcoholic, but he was a drunk. He did not drink every day or every week as my other grandfather did, but he would get dog drunk one or two times a year. He died as a young man because his body had been destroyed by beverage alcohol. I could go on telling of other people I have known who have ruined themselves and hurt many others around them, but I think you see the tragedies of strong drink. I suspect that virtually every one of you listening to me today could give me examples of family members and friends who hurt themselves and others by their drinking. I shall close our discussion today with a few thoughts about protecting our children. First, pattern your home after the plan which God has given in His inspired Word. A home not built according to God's will cannot be what God wants it to be. Failure to build as God directs leaves open the possibility of sexual promiscuity, use and abuse of alcohol and other drugs, and similar conditions which destroy thousands of our young people. Second, make sure your child has the benefit of the church's influence in his or her life. It will not do to send your child to church services. Take them to every service, Sunday morning and Sunday night, Wednesday evening Bible study, gospel meetings, and vacation Bible school. That is, if you care what kind of moral values your child develops. Third, keep up with what is happening in your child's school. We must know the teachers, the school administrators, and the curriculum. Otherwise, you have no idea what your child is learning. Let me close with one final word. God expects you to protect your child from physical and spiritual harm. May God help us all to do exactly that. Thank you, and may God bless you.